condemned by one who is filled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay. I'm going to read from my father. Verse 79. He who drinks in the Dharma lives happily with a serene mind. The wise man always takes delight in the Dharma, Bodhipakkhaya Dharma, taught by the Noble One Arya. The story of Thera Mahakapina. While living at the Jetavana Monastery, the Buddha spoke verse 79 of this book about the Thera Mahakapina. Mahakapina was king of Sukhutavati. He had a queen named Anauchya. He also had 1,000 ministers to help him rule the country. One day the king accompanied with those 1,000 ministers was out in the park. There they met some merchants from Savatthi. On learning about the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha from these merchants, the king and his minister immediately led for Savatthi. One that day, when the Buddha looked over the world with his supernormal power, he saw in his vision Mahakapina and his ministers coming towards Savatthi. He already knew that they were soon to attain arahatship. The Buddha went to a palace 120 yojanas away from Savatthi to meet them. There he waited for them under a banyan tree on the bank of the river Kendapaka. King Mahakapina and his ministers came to the place where the Buddha was waiting for them. When they saw the Buddha with six color beams of light coming from his body, they approached the Buddha and paid respect to him. The Buddha then delivered a talk to them. After listening to the talk, the king and all his ministers attained Sotapatti fruition, and they asked the Buddha to permit them to join the order. The Buddha, reflecting on their past and finding that they had made offering of yellow robes in a past existence, said to them, "Ehe bhikkhu," and they all became bhikkhus. Meanwhile, Queen Anuja, learning about the king's departure for Savatthi, sent for the wise of the 1,000 ministers, and together with them followed the king's trail. They too came to the place where the Buddha was, and seeing the Buddha with a halo of six colors, paid respect to him. All this time, the Buddha, by exercising his supernormal power, had made the king and his minister invisible, so that the wise did not see them. The queen therefore asked where the king and his minister were. The Buddha told the queen and her party to wait for a while, and that the king would soon come with his minister. The Buddha then gave another talk. At the end of this talk, the king and his minister attained arahatship. The queen and the wives of the ministers attained Sotapatti fruition. At that moment, the queen and her party saw the newly admitted bhikkhus and recognized them as their former husbands. The ladies also asked from the Buddha to enter the order of bhikkhunis, so they were directed to go ahead to Savatthi. There they entered the order, and very soon they also attained arahatship. The Buddha then returned to the Jetavana monastery accompanied by 1,000 bhikkhus. At the Jetavana monastery, Thera Mahakapina, while resting during the night or during the day, would often say, "Oh, what happiness! Aho Sukhang." The bhikkhus, hearing him saying this so many times a day, told the Buddha about it. To them the Buddha replied, "My son, Kapina, having had the test of the Dhamma, lives happily with a serene mind. He is saying these words of gladness repeatedly with reference to Nibbana." Then the Buddha spoke in verse as follows. Verse 79. He who drinks in the Dhamma lives happily with a serene mind. The wise man always takes delight in the Dhamma, Bodhipakkhaya Dhamma, taught by the noble ones, Arya.
What do you think of that story? I'm sure if you think about it, it'll probably raise some questions. For starters, a king and 1,000 ministers become monks walking away from a kingdom just like Buddha had done prior. And their wives also walking away from the kingdom. I mean, can you imagine the Prime Minister of Malaysia doing the same thing? Or the previous?
They didn't have DJs and the carousel. And so when you think about it in context with that time, it's not improbable. What would they have been leaving?
A life of comfort.
Well,
king and ministers.
One king and ministers. On the other hand, you also, these are kings and ministers who were so close to arahantship, which means that they were of very good character, they were kind souls, they were peaceful souls. They were not the fighting, bitching type of persons that might be in today's politics, for example. And therefore, and yet they walked away from all that. And of course, I was talking to Lawrence earlier this afternoon, there's no mention about what happened to the country that they left behind. But for them to walk away, become monks, simple monks in Buddha's time, and then to go repeat this phrase, "Oh, what happiness," many times, repeatedly. It tells you something about what this Nibbana is. And then you come along, you hear a monk like Ajahn Brahm. It's been said that old monks don't lie. Of course, it's the same monk who said it, but that same monk also said, somewhere in here is a bliss, out of this world bliss, bliss beyond sex, pleasure, whatever you have in this world. And then you wonder, what are we talking about here? And if you read the suttas, it doesn't say very much. Even when you come across the description of the four jhanas, right? All it says is, by the time the monk gets to third jhana, he says, it's peaceful abiding, and that's all it says. It doesn't speak in superfluous terms.
Maybe that just means they lack the words to describe it.
But none of the superlative words were used. Not by Buddha himself anyway. But there in here, the Metta Sutta does give an indication of how to get there, or what is it that leads towards that happiness. And here it talks about contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, frugal in their ways. Not wishing harm upon another. And I suppose these words, they kind of resonated with me. I'm a pretty beginner meditator myself. I mean, I did start meditating, learning from Ajahn Brahm some almost 10 years ago, but I wasn't a regular until I came to Perth in Bodhinyana 2 years ago, that I sit more regularly on a daily basis. But what I've learned since is that that the happiness is something you kind of decide beforehand. It's like, can you listen? If we were to have heard the same sermon that Buddha gave to those, that to that king and his 1,000 ministers, would we have become enlightened?
No.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Why?
Not really.
Not really is one, but probably because we're not inclined. We're not wanting it.
Yeah.
So, if somebody gives you something you don't want, it doesn't make very, you don't treasure it, you don't pick it up. But if you see something you want, you would pick it up. And you've heard of the description of the monkey mind, right? And you've seen documentaries about videos about monkeys and what they do, and you see that their eyes will be looking everywhere all the time, and they're picking one thing up after another, and they would get upset if the next monkey picks something up and he doesn't get it. And that's a pretty accurate description of what the mind does. That it looks for things to pick up. It's the habit of the mind. Quite often the question is, when you sit down in meditation, how do you stop the monkey mind from picking up stuff? Yes.
Well, I found, I mean, I've been meditating for quite a while, that you do what the monks have suggested. You just sort of know that you get the thought coming up, but then you just don't force it too much and just let it go. Then I found, after some years, that it does settle down. The thoughts settle down.
Yeah.
And in the end, you don't get many coming up. And if you do, you just let them go.
That's
and
right.
Like I read the other day, they said, don't be afraid to just start again. Don't just think, oh, this is good, this is terrible, I'm never going to get anywhere. Just think, okay, I'm just going to start to clear my mind and just keep going, basically. Not actually start again, but just keep going with the breath. And then I find, well, as I say, it doesn't happen overnight, does it? But I think in the end, it does calm down.
Yeah. So habitually, what you're doing is you're learning not to
go off with the mind.
Not to grasp onto them, even as they come past you.
You'll try it on, won't it, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, what about yesterday? What so-and-so said? Oh, well, what about tomorrow? I'm supposed to be doing that. No.
Yeah, so that's pretty good, yeah. I've also attended Ajahn Brahm's 9-day retreats a few times, and one of the things he repeats quite often right at the beginning of the meditation retreats is that happiness is the glue. This aho sukham, oh what joy, oh what happiness, is a glue to hold your mind to stillness. If you imagine an image of a monkey, right? How do you get a monkey to sit down quietly?
Give him a heap of what he wants.
You glue it to a seat.
If you give him a heap, if you give him a heap of what it wants, lots of bananas, it will go crazy. It won't stop. Right. But if you put that monkey in a nice secure space, imagine if you were to cuddle that monkey, nice and warm, secure. Can be a monkey, can be a baby, can be, and then the monkey will feel contented, happy, safe, and then it would settle down, I guess.
For a while.
Just like our minds, a monkey minds behave the same way. So what we would want to try and do then in this meditation is to give it that happiness and joy. I've tried other forms of meditation before, what they call the Vipassana meditation, Mahasi method. Note everything that happens in your mind, and or the standard breathing meditation that says watch your breath, don't lose track of your breath. And after a while it feels like, okay, look at that dot on the wall, look at that plug on the wall, stare at it, don't let your eyes stray from it. It's so hard. But if there was something nice, something that you feel emotionally attached to or pleasant, then chances are your mind would stay. It's not so dry a subject like plug on the wall. So we're going to try that. So let's try. Start by getting yourself into a nice comfortable posture. And we'll ask half. Any questions, by the way? My experience is by the end of the meditation, you'll be all so nice and relaxed. You won't probably ask any questions. But if you want to ask any now, I welcome it. No? Okay. Let's try it. So sit down, relax. Yeah. As Ajahn says, spend a good 5 minutes at least to scan your body and make sure everything is comfortable. Starting from the furthest end, all your 10 toes. See if you can feel all your 10 toes. And relax them. During the first few minutes, feel free to adjust whatever your posture, your placement of your feet, your hands. And as you move to your feet, go to the top of the feet, go to the soles. Go to the arches. And relax. Next to your heel. If you walk a lot, the heels take a lot of pounding. Let it rest. Moving up to the calves. Big muscles there. The shin. And up to the knees. Let go of any tension. And as you let go of the tension, you might feel some tingling sensations. You might even feel more aches and pains appearing. that the aches and pains, when they appear now, they're healing, they're resting, rejuvenating. Let the tiredness flow out. Moving up. The upper legs, the thigh muscles, the quadriceps. Hamstrings. Up to the hip and the bum area. Going up the back, the lumbar support, the lumbar muscles. It's a very comfortable chair, so allow yourself to sink into the chair and relax. Let go of the lumbar muscles. Moving inside a bit into your abdominal space. Relax your intestines, relax the kidneys, relax the adrenal glands. Sometimes when we are tense, we also tense up our abdomen. Now we can relax. Moving up into the thorax area, the chest area, and the back muscles behind the shoulder blades. Sometimes as I relax my trunk, I even feel a shot of adrenaline as if it's been pent up. And now it just drains away. Moving on to the shoulders, the arms, the wrists, and the hands. Look for any tightness and let go. Moving on up to the neck area. This is another area that we commonly clench when we feel tension. The back of the neck. Sometimes we clench it so hard and for so long, we can't find a switch to unclench it. Give yourself time. Slowly let go of the back of the neck. To the front, facial muscles, jaw muscles, the forehead, our cheeks. Loosen them and let them relax. Again, sometimes we frown so often we forget how to unfrown. See if you can find the switch. invite you to go 1 inch behind your face, specifically the eyeballs, and the space behind your forehead, and see if there's any tension and tiredness there. If you, like me, spend a lot of time thinking, you might find tension in the eyeballs and a throbbing behind the forehead. Let the tiredness ooze out and drip away. If you like, you can scan your body from top to bottom one more time. See if there's any place that requires a bit more attention, a bit more TLC. Let's hang out in the present moment, being mindful of the present moment. And in your mind's eye, there's a space around you that you're aware of, behind your eyelids. For me, this space is about one arm's length around me. And if you pay attention, somewhere in this space is our old friend, the breath. I invite you to give this old friend a big bear hug. Imagine this friend still hanging on to you, while you crawl up and sit in his or her lap, being cuddled. Just like a baby being held in a mother's arms. In the same way that the baby can feel the mother's breath, we can feel our good friend's breath. Feels beautifully secure, safe, warm, as if we are in a cocoon. Feel safe enough that you can relax and let the body rejuvenate. You can let our guards down. you like. You can do a scan of your body again and see if there's anything else you want to relax, any other tensions that you're still holding. In the chest area, in the abdomen, in the head, in the neck. As you relax, you can feel the tiredness and the tensions ooze out and flow away. Continue to enjoy the rhythm of the breath, embracing all around. Just like the contented monkey, our mind also settles down, be it cuddled,
mm-hmm.
you might want to take note of how pleasant it is inside here. Like being in bed on a Sunday morning. No appointments. Just relaxed. Contented. Now we have a few more minutes. I would like to invite you to try a different experiment. What if we now return a favor and cradle our breath in our arms? Imagine the breath was that little baby monkey sitting on your lap. And you can feel the baby's every breath. From the rhythm of the breath, you can decipher its every mood, tension, contentment, sadness, gladness. It's all in the breath. Feel the breath as you cradle it. Just as the breath has cared for us in the beginning, we now care for the breath. Give yourself another minute. You might want to say your goodbyes to a good friend, and hopefully we'll meet again. Not too far into the future. At the end of the third bell, you may come out. Very good. Looks like you enjoyed it. Did that image work for you? Yes? Stops the thinking? Yeah, so I came up with this idea of the image based on what Ajahn Brahm said repeatedly, that happiness is the glue. Striving while you're meditating, it makes the mind more agitated. Yeah. Whereas if you give it peace and joy, the mind settles down, stays with you. Any comments? Any questions? Yes.
When you said that you've been meditating for about 10 years, you said you found it hard at first because you were thinking so much.
My experience with meditation, Ajahn Brahm has been coming to Malaysia for a long, long time. So, and his evening public talks are open his evening retreat talks are open to the public. So we went and watched, and then we said, "Huh, me and my wife, we can do this. But Ajahn Brahm only runs a retreat in Malaysia once a year. So in the meantime, instead of waiting for the following year, we both went for Mahasi Method Vipassana Retreat. You may or may not be familiar with it, but the instructions were, watch what happens in your mind and take note of them. If you are thinking, if you are feeling an itch, and so you keep on labeling something once every second. And they go on to say, okay, if you now feel, oh, bladder, intention to get up, and then lifting. And you have to keep on doing that, as in, and of course, after a while it becomes a chore. But that's the instruction for the whole 14 days. Yeah. Of course, it takes willpower, it takes a great deal of determination. And I came away from 14 days with a headache that lasted me for a long, long time. And then, of course, since then, I've been on many Ajahn Brahm retreats once a year. The Singaporeans organize a very good one. They call it executive retreat, if you ever get a chance. The Singaporeans, being Singaporeans, are as busy as they are. And Singapore, being as expensive as it is, would always organize a 9-day retreat away from Singapore. It's a holiday come meditation thingy. And quite often it'd be in Thailand or Malaysia, more often Thailand than Malaysia. Been Chiang Mai or Hua Hin, one of those resort towns. Four star or five star hotel. And it would be first 4 days of free and easy. Wake up if you want, come for the talk if you want, meditate if you want, go shopping if you want, or go swimming in the pool if you want. But it helps you relax very quickly. And then the next 4 or 5 days would be Noble Silence, 2 meals a day type retreat. And we went for a few of those as well. And you learn quickly, okay, that's striving. Well, okay, you don't learn very quickly. You still try very hard, as we all do, to try and meditate. Spend more time on the cushion, even if it's painful or uncomfortable. But soon enough, especially if you go to Bodhiyana, you learn how to relax a bit more. And you hear again Ajahn repeating, it's to let go. It's for happiness, it's not an achievement. Yeah. And he has to keep saying, I suppose, he has to drum it in a lot of times before some of us get it.
And then I suppose you get reap the benefit then, don't you? Start reaping the benefit yourself. And you realise.
Yes. So then you learn to relax, you learn to let go. And I guess also what happens is that if you pull yourself away from this achievement-oriented thing, and it becomes a more experiential thing, like what we just did, you can let go, you can feel what's going on in your body, you can feel the tensions, and then when you let go the tensions, you might feel an adrenaline rush, I don't know if you do. And for me, even if the aches and pains come up, you kind of know that it's coming up and it's getting healed. Sort of feeling, intuition, I don't know if it's a fact or not. And if you do let the emotions come up, if you find where the tensions are due to emotional tightness, then there is some healing as well, I think. Yeah. So, yeah, it helps.
I would go as far as to say it is the answer.
Yeah, but I mean, Ajahn Brahm also does point out, especially amongst the monks' circle with Ajahn Brahmani, that out there in the world, out here in the world, people do have these mindfulness practices and behavioral therapy or whatever you call it, but it only goes so far. And what these documents tell you is, beyond this healing that we talk about, there is happiness, bliss beyond the world that we sometimes forget exists. But then also, I mean, taking on what I overheard during the evening tea, imagine if you actually suffered dementia and you forgot where you were, you forgot who you are, you forgot who's beside you, but you were in this mental state all the time, wouldn't it be nice and pleasant? I would enjoy it, I think. Not having to know, having forgotten all your past quarrels, having forgotten all your past responsibilities.
Yeah, you meet new people all the time.
But the problem is the old habits of that monkey mind.
Yeah.
Well, when you get out of this mood, you'll start picking up things again, and you'll start getting involved with the neighbor's affairs, your children's affairs, your parents' affairs, your colleagues' affairs. And then you'll want to give free advice to everybody and tell them what they should do. Yeah. So anyway, anything else? Any last minute?
Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize the manner, in every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, and the past is the teacher of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble Lord, and the Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Yes.
Bhavatu sabba mangalam rakantu sabba devata sabba buddha nubhavena sada soti bhavantu te bhavatu sabba mangalam rakantu sabba devata sabba dhamma nubhavena sada soti bhavantu te bhavatu sabba mangalam rakantu sabba devata
Sabba sankhano bhavena sadasoti.